We had a fascinating interview yesterday with Irina Filatova, Professor Irina Filatova, who hails from Moscow originally, is now a South African. And she said her advice to South Africa was very simple. Just keep quiet. Don't go into the international community in this very turbulent time and try and tell people what they should be doing. Well, we woke up this morning to find out that it's exactly the opposite. Cyril Ramaphosa has written a piece for a publication called Foreign Policy. It's based in Washington. And, well, to say it was it's going to get up the noses of the Americans is an understatement. Dr. Franz Grenier, the chairman of the board of the Social Research Foundation, joins us now. Thanks for joining us so nice and early, Franz. Just to put it in context, Foreign Policy magazine, how relevant is it?
Well, very relevant. It's a prominent international publication. And the message you place in it, regardless of who you are, is one that will be picked up within, you know, a matter of hours by serious foreign policy people around the world.
And the message that was sent by Cyril Ramaphosa and his co-authors, the Prime Minister of Malaysia and the President of Colombia and some activists from India, was sending, sticking a bit of a stick in the eye of the Trump administration and particularly Israel. How did you interpret what they wrote?
I thought it was a very aggressive attack that essentially said to hell with the United States and with the Trump administration and with Israel and with the Israeli leadership. I don't think they could have put it any firmer than that in the way in which they conveyed the message.
And the reason for doing this, given that South Africa is in a precarious situation, looking at our economy, looking at the latest SRF polls, which showed the ANC, Ramaphosa's party, down to 32%, what might have motivated it?
Well, I don't see the economic sense in it. You know, the ANC last week from the SRF got a very bad poll number, the lowest it's been. It's down into the 30s now. The few days ahead of that, there's great difficulty in even presenting the budget because the tax increase, the VAT increase is so complicated and so politically unpopular and would cause such great further damage, even to the ANC's own voter base, had that gone through. You're also in a position where the growth outlook for the South African economy is sitting at sub 2%, perhaps closer to 1% of GDP. We know that at that level, it's not possible to close the unemployment gap that the ANC itself needs for its longer-term political survival. And the most important number is fixed investment to GDP. That sits at about 15%, and that, at that level, it's consistent with a 1.5% economic growth rate. But to take the economic growth rate to, let's say, near a 4%, you need to lift fixed investment to GDP to around 25%. And foreign policy positioning along the lines of what we saw yesterday in a Foreign Policy magazine, I don't see how that leads to the economic solutions, the investment increases that are necessary to improve living standards in South Africa. And ultimately, too, and this is the great irony of the thing, under the leadership of Mr. Ramaphosa, save the ANC from what might be, the way things are going now, it's complete annihilation.
So why double down on an anti-American policy when the Americans are already saying that they're very unhappy with the way that South Africa's going and they've already cut off aid? Now they can perhaps make even more punitive sanctions against this country.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say cutting off aid is a punitive sanction, not that you've said that. I mean, this, one must remember, is the money of American taxpayers. And if they wish to have it back, that is so. And South Africans should ask themselves a question about what kind of society have they themselves created where critical upliftment programs and the like, and kill my phone, critical upliftment programs and the like need to be funded by foreigners. However, sanctions are took a great leap forward yesterday after this foreign affairs piece. And not sure what that's going to be, but if this continues, the sanctions may look like this. There may be actions against specific South African individuals or institutions that are seen to threaten the interests of the United States or act in a corrupt fashion or threaten human rights around the world. Those may be preceded by some actions on a GOA, but remember, GOA is a very small proportion of South African exports. If you export under a GOA, of course, that's of little comfort to you. And the country's auto industry may be brought down by this. But that's a step. Then you get to more targeted sanctions. And beyond that, the one that I think South African institutions, banks and the like need to watch most carefully, the greatest risk for them is sanctions on the holding of South African government debt. If that step is later taken, then the consequences inside the South African economy and for really anyone that does business here, but financial institutions in particular, will be very, very serious.
Franz, we know that everybody gets emotional about certain things, and particularly in this case, we know the ANC and Cyril Ramaphosa are very unhappy about, in their perception, the way that the Palestinians, or particularly in Gaza, are being treated. But surely there's a risk-reward situation here. There are many things that we as private citizens feel upset about, but we don't go and scream and shout in the streets about them because there is a consequence to it. Surely there's some kind of a brains trust within the union buildings who would say, but hang on, the consequences of these current actions are going to really hurt the country.
Well, look, the brains trust in the union buildings has taken the ANC to 40% in the last election, which was a completely unnecessary result for them. I discussed at dinner this evening with some people who were historically very close to the ANC about just why that was even allowed to happen. It was completely unnecessary. Had some investment and some growth flowed into the South African economy sufficient to create 100,000-200,000 net new jobs per year. In practice, under the leadership of Mr. Ramaphosa, the number of net new jobs per year is less than 100,000. At the times, it's been 50,000. When Mandela and Mbeki ran South Africa, we were creating 500,000 net new jobs per year. And the discussion that I've never had a proper answer to, and I couldn't get one out of dinner last night, was why who allows the ANC to be so absolutely wrecked by counterproductive decisions, and whatever's behind this stuff, I'll go into that for you in a moment, but whatever's behind this stuff is suicidal for South Africa's economy, is suicidal for the ANC as a direct consequence of that. And what I think is useful, if people haven't done it, is go look a bit at India's foreign policy. Recently, the Indians and the Americans were able to get together and talk to each other. One or two mildly critical things were said, but nothing terrible in the main. India maintains relations with countries all around the world, Russia, China, the likes, and does so terribly well. And to its great advantage, and maintains the same with Europe and the United States. So it's perfectly possible to maintain a balanced foreign policy, and I think it would be wise for any South African government not to lean heavily to one ideological pole or another, but to run a South Africa first foreign policy that sought to attract advantages even if it comes to playing off the great powers and their interests in Africa against each other. But your question on the Brands Trust, the answer is it's the same Brands Trust that crashed the ANC into the ground in a fast detonation of, and completely unnecessarily, and now has taken it to 200 days into GNU to just over 30% of the vote. I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't understand it, Alec. Makes no sense.
You mentioned the GNU. The whole opportunity for the GNU is to create employment. If you were sitting as a member, a non-ANC member of the GNU today, looking at this aggressive attack on those who can help to create employment in South Africa, surely you must be reconsidering staying in the GNU, because if it fails due to ANC or Cyril Ramaphosa's approach on issues like this, then you will also be punished in the polls, presumably.
Yeah, well, the question of the alternatives and how you've positioned yourself, etc. To date, the DA is holding up and it's looking okay. And MK and the EFF have lost a little bit of support. But in the fullness of time, if you are too closely associated with being influential in the government that was seen as not being able to bring about an economic reformation, raise living standards, if you're seen as very close to the ANC through that whole process, then you must expect that there will be damage to your credibility. And in terms of trying to sell the idea in future elections that, yeah, put us in the administration because we are very effective at bringing about reform. So that kind of damage will, in the fullness of time, begin to be felt, I expect.
But when you have a team and your captain has gone rogue, which appears increasingly to be the situation with Ramaphosa, quite apart from this foreign policy article, the proposed increase of 2 percentage points in VAT has been resisted by many within his own party, even within his own cabinet. Surely that's the time to say we need a new leader?
Well, you might think so, yes, but it's very difficult to get a clear answer on who that leader might be, even from people who might be in a position to know. There's also a political problem inside the ANC that there's so little confidence in any of its leaders that what confidence there is tends to attach to Mr. Ramaphosa. So if you removed him, you could get into real trouble. In this data we got in last week, one of the questions my colleagues asked was essentially to test. They created a situation where Mr. Ramaphosa was no longer around. He lost a vote of no confidence, I think. And then they ran an election in the aftermath of that. And what that found is that ANC support fell even further. So your term going rogue is an interesting idea. I don't think it's too... If you're an ANC person who's worried about the future of your party and what's happening to it, I don't think you'd be able to say that the idea here presented by Alec, that the ANC leader's gone rogue on some gambit of his own that is wholly at odds with the interests of his party, that is too far-fetched at all. And, again, if you talk to people about these things and developments around, of course, there's strongly held views in the ANC about the Palestinians. There's a historical position there. The Palestinians have been through terrible eras, and the suffering and trauma of Gaza is just appalling. However, the enthusiasm for that position, or the extent to which it energizes people, does, in my view, not extend beyond South Africa's national interest, if indeed that's what's going on here. And there is a view, and we put it out there now, there is a view that what the South Africans, or some, a minority of the South Africans are busy with, is not in the main an effort to... flag the plight of the Palestinians, but is instead something else. And that something else is an attempt to stigmatize Israel. And to stigmatize Israel in pursuit of two objectives. The first is to fracture internal opinion in Israel about service in the IDF. Young Israelis would feel so cast out of and sort of global society and the like that they'd begin to feel that, you know, this isn't a project they want to be part of. And outside of Israel, to so fracture opinion and stigmatize Israeli opinion in the Western world that young American college kids place a lot of pressure on Congress and to cut off arms supplies to Israel. And this is definitely an objective you could achieve through a policy of stigmatization. And the combined effect, both of fracturing confidence in the idea of Israel within Israel and cutting off the arms supply, certainly the smart weapons supply from without, would have the effect of putting Israel in a position where it may cease to exist and be ultimately overrun. And I think Israel's enemies in the Middle East have learned again at the end of this conflict that Israel is hard enough as a target that to defeat it militarily, to defeat it on the battlefield is, again, as has been the case at so many intervals since Israel's establishment, not something that is yet within their power. You know, Iron Dome and so on can shoot down a sort of a pigeon, you know, flying over Israel if it chose to. However, the ideological attacks against Israel fly straight through Iron Dome. You can't intercept it. You can't stop it. The Israeli Air Force can't stop the drip feeding of the ideas that stigmatize. And there may be a sense in amongst Israel's allies around the world, and certainly in the current American administration, that what the South Africans are busy with is an attempt to weaken Israel ideologically and through stigmatization to a point where it can be defeated and overrun ultimately. And this is a different state of affairs to the historical position on the Palestinians and the Palestinian state. And in my little experience, I don't think the Americans, even these new Americans, have a fundamental problem with ANC's historical sympathy for the Palestinians. And I certainly don't think they have a problem with the ANC's relations with Russia in the main. They've got an idea for Ukraine, and we've seen that play out in recent days. So puts them, if anything, in the ANC camp, even though the ANC has not got out of its own camp and ganged up with Europe against the Americans. And I don't think there's a fundamental problem in South Africa's dealings with China. I think the Americans concede that China is everywhere and you have to deal with it. And we go back to the example of India, maintains excellent relations. China, Russia, and the likes, no danger of American sanctions. Here, there's that danger has crept in. And the fact of it is, it must be sorted out, but the perception in Washington will very likely be that this is a malign South African effort to weaken to the point of its potential destruction critical American ally in the Middle East, and that may inform the severity of whatever sanctions are. We are now well on our way to that, I'm afraid, are taken against the South African.
Sure, France, that's definitely second-level thinking in an area that I can be pretty sure that the normal worker for Ford Motor Company in Gauteng is not thinking about. The guy who works at KFC is not thinking about. The guy who eats at McDonald's is not thinking about it. Of course, even worse than that, the whole impact on South African interest rates. We saw what happened in 1985. But just to close off with the recruitment by Donald Trump of Vladimir Putin, who was the ANC's best pal. How would that on a global stage impact, and would that have anything to do with this very aggressive reaction? On the one hand, the ANC for the first time voting for Ukraine at the United Nations against Russia, and for this, and the second time this article.
Well, I mean, I've probably said it on your show before that I had a somewhat different take on what precipitated the war in Ukraine, and that the idea of pure unbridled Russian aggression, simply rolling over the border, and was a bit overdone, and that NATO's expansion did threaten Russia. It certainly expanded beyond initial agreements, and that possibly, in the view of some Russian analysts, there had been green-lighted an attempt to mass forces in the east of Ukraine and try and drive right through through the east and cut off the Crimea and the Russian port at Sevastopol. And there are Russian analysts around who would say, and they make a case that you have to listen to very closely, that Russia's actions were defensive in the main. The Russian conflict further didn't make a vast amount of strategic sense for the Western world, given that Russia might easily be turned as a buffer or bulwark against Chinese expansion. And Russia and China's relations aren't excellent by any means, and if Russia feels threatened by Europe and NATO on the sort of left flank, on the right flank, there's similar concerns around China. And in addition, the war was completely futile from the start, the idea that it could be won. And part of that futility, and this is particularly bad, was that the Europeans never committed the resources to Ukraine to actually stand a chance of beating the Russians. So it became this meat grinder with tens of thousands of young men sent to their deaths for no good reason at all, only to ultimately settle the conflict along the lines of the old Minsk Accords, which is what Henry Kissinger had suggested as this, before this meat grinder played out. And is probably now what's going to happen in some respects. But the fascinating thing is that whatever little group, and I don't think this is the ANC en masse at all, whatever little group is commanding the South African foreign policy move that you saw yesterday in foreign affairs, is so utterly hostile to the Americans that they've even flipped the position on the war in Ukraine, and now have tried to gang up with the Europeans against the Americans. My sense of it, Alec, is that there is a small little core somewhere inside the government and the ANC that has captured South Africa's foreign policy machinery, and that they're driving that foreign policy for an object. I mean, we see this time and time again, driving foreign policy for whatever the objective is, but entirely at odds with the interest of the country and with its people, and entirely at odds ultimately with the interest of the ANC itself. And it just makes you think again of this point that don't think the ANC had to lose the election last year. It would have been the simplest thing in the world for them not to have done so. But the Brains Trust, as you mentioned, that brought about that catastrophic result, seem to be some of the same Brains Trust that's bringing about this foreign policy result, and it's going to have catastrophic consequences again for South Africa. It's going to have catastrophic consequences as a direct consequence of that for the African National Congress.
Dr. Frans Grenier is the chairman of the Social Research Foundation Board, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.